Good morning. I don't believe there's a single equation in this talk. It's all pictures. My name's Al Leon Garcia. I'm in the electrical and computer engineering department here. And when I was contacted about giving a talk here in terms of, is there anything interesting that you can say about queuing? In fact, I'll discuss this activity in a second, in a startup, but there was a lot of performance problems. And so what I thought I'd do is talk about some of the problems we ran into, in particular one that I call the skinny flow problem. But that when I went back and looked at the documentation, they used a more respectable thin flow problem. Let's see, what else can I say? This activity was done as part of Axolite Networks. That was a company that I helped co-found in Ottawa and Pittsburgh. And that we founded in 1999 and that closed in January of this year. The work I'll be reporting, we had a systems group that did the algorithm design and performance analysis. And the principal contributor in terms of the work I'll report was Srini Ramaswamy. But there was a whole bunch of other people in the systems group, Masood Hashemi, Siavash Korshandi, Safa Almalki. So it's a team effort, really. And myself, I was involved in it, too. Okay, what we were trying to do was, in 1999, one of my students from about 15 years ago, Hyung Kim, got a hold of an optical component that was being used in creating photographic images or some weird for us in telecom application. And he figured out, hey, we can build a switch out of this, an optical transparent switch out of this. And what distinguished it from all other technologies that were available for switching was that this one could be reconfigured very quickly in nanoseconds. And so we set about building a switch. We wanted to build a switch and a really big one. Okay, so really big, what does that mean? I had 128 inputs by 128 outputs. Okay, these are fibers coming in. Now, each fiber could carry an entire optical signal, and the capacity of a fiber is in terabits. Okay, but the technology that we had available to work with was 10 gigabits. So we were working with 10 gigabits per second per port. So that translates into a switch that can carry the first cut at the switch, 1.28 terabits per second. And if you want to think in terms of a number, that's a million, 1 terabit is a million DSL lines at 1 megabit. But most of the time, DSL line's not going at a megabit, so let's say 250 kilobits. So this guy could handle 4 million of those. Okay, so these guys are big. The switch was, we're very ambitious. We wanted a switch that could handle SONET traffic, which is a traditional telephony traffic, time division, multiplexed frames. Okay, and so the design around SONET is a scheduling problem, really. And then also handled packet traffic, high-speed packet traffic of the sort that Alpha was talking about, okay? And this is in an environment of a context of differentiated services internet where you're talking about an internet that can support a number of types of service, okay? So the idea is there's 6 bits for that. There can be up to, 64 possible services. We were designing for 8, which looked like what the industry was looking for. In the context that I'm going to talk about, I'm not going to talk about all the different kinds of services offered to packet, but rather what we were offering inside the switch, which is not visible to the outside world. Okay, and there we had two classes, real-time, non-real-time. Real-time, obviously, we wanted to give a low delay transfer, and non-real-time could wait. Real-time means in the order of 50 milliseconds, and non-real-time could mean milliseconds. Okay, so big numbers, big difference in numbers. Okay, the switch that we came with was not a crossbar, but it can be viewed as a crossbar. In other words, we took these optical components and interconnected them, had some control electronics to turn them on and off. And when the dust settled and we had the electronics had done their part, it looked like a crossbar. Okay? A crossbar, how many of you know what a crossbar switch is? Some. Okay. A crossbar is an arrangement of connecting inputs to outputs. Okay? And it has the property that if you have a distinct set of requests at the input, a permutation, if you will, where each output appears once, that connection can take place. So you can do that transfer. Okay? So the fabric can be viewed. So we had a 128 by 128 crossbar, non-blocking. Okay? Now the stuff coming in on each of these lines is multiplex packet flows. We're leaving the SONET out, so it's multiplex packet flows. Okay? Okay, so the question is, how do you design this guy? Okay? Now the way it was done, or has been done, is if you have a crossbar and you have packet traffic, and typically in cell type of situations, as in the previous talk, what you do is you take blocks of 64 bytes, okay? So you slot the crossbar. The inputs of the crossbar are synchronized. And what you do is you transfer a chunk of 64 bytes across every 64 bytes, okay? And the problem is that if you're going at 10 gigabits per second, this means that you have to rearrange this fabric in 50 nanoseconds, okay? And the thing is that behind the scenes, you have to have a scheduler that's telling which inputs get to go to which outputs. And so this means you have to make that decision in 50 nanoseconds. There's just no way. There's no way in terms of current electronics. And by the way, we're building all these chips from scratch. Okay. So we realized right away, gee, this is not possible, no matter how you look at it. It's not possible. And but the other point was it's not necessary, because when you're going at 10 gigabits per second, the delays in sending 1,000 bits is nothing. It's very small. Okay? So while most people in the optical arena were trying to get their fabrics to switch as fast as possible, okay, and that's why they say packet switching for optical is many years into the future, what we decided to do is let's go for bigger size packets, for example, 1,000 to 2,000 bytes. That happens to be the size of a maximum size Ethernet packet. Okay, so it's the kind of things you run into in practice. But it also comes down to around a microsecond at those speeds, 1-2 microseconds, and which is actually smaller than the original delay for an ATM cell when ATM was first conceived. So in terms of what the user perceived delay is, this is not that. Okay, so our objective was to build this switch so that it could match the performance of existing ATMs, high-speed routers, which were Cisco. Okay, so and that meant delays around 50 microseconds for packet, real time. Traffic. Okay, so what's a thin flow or a skinny flow, if you will? Okay. The reason we chose mega packets had to do with the granularity of control that we could afford. Okay, we had a chip group working with a systems group, and they had figured out that we could go to around a microsecond for 128 by 128 switch and be able to do the scheduling, but no faster. Okay, so our granularity of control is fixed. You can control this fabric at that speed and no more. Okay, now, so what happens is, so that's fixed. Our speed is fixed, 10 gigabits per second. But what happens is, for the real-time flow, okay, it's possible that the proportion of flows that require low delay, real-time requirement, can be quite small. Let's say 50 megabits per second, or even 10 megabits per second. Okay, that turns out to be a tiny fraction, less than 1% of 10 gigabits per second. Okay, and that poses problems, we'll see in a second, in terms of how you're going to deliver the performance. So the skinny flow problem is a relative thing. you have a certain granularity of control, but the flows that you're trying to satisfy are smaller. There's a mismatch, if you will, in scale, and that's where the problem comes from. In our case, it comes out readily if remember, we have 128 ports, and if the traffic coming in, real-time traffic, is equally distributed, even if it's all real-time, okay, what you get is something less than 1% at each place. So the flows are skinny, if you will. We'll see in a second that causes a problem with transfer delays. Okay, so the target maximum, okay, we were shooting for typical 50 microseconds, target maximum 250 microseconds. And for example, at 50 megabits per second, the time to fill a mega packet is 320 microseconds. It's already too big. Okay? So you're going to have to send what we call mega packets, these larger units, unfilled. In other words, you're going to waste bandwidth in the fabric. And the whole question here is, how do you trade off that wasted bandwidth versus delay versus the performance of the non-real-time traffic, which you can cause to go into overload? Okay? So the first thing you can think of is to introduce a timer. Okay? You've got, I think I have a picture. Yeah. So you got your packets coming in here, okay, and you're trying to fill in a 2 kilobyte mega packet, okay, but the traffic is bursty arrivals, okay, so it's going to take a certain period of time to fill, and on average it's coming in at a very slow speed. So what you need to do is introduce a timer and says, I'm willing to wait this long, and if it doesn't come in, okay, then you don't get to transmit automatically, because remember, you're going across a fabric. This is on the input side of the fabric. So you have to put in a request, please, I'm interested in going to such and such an output port, okay? So you have to put in the request, and then eventually you get a grant and you get sent. Okay, so what happens is you get this performance, okay? Let's see. Yes, this is without the timer. I'm sorry. This is without the timer, okay? So what happens is you have to wait. The lower the rate, the longer you have to wait to fill it up. Okay, so I got these two charts that I don't order, okay? So without the timer, you have this problem, and that's what you're trying to do. So you're going to introduce a timer. Okay, so let's talk about how we started. Okay? Okay, we got our optical fabric here, and there's some control electronics in the background deciding who the input, that's one input card, that's one of his buffers from the first talk, okay? You've got packet coming in at 10 gigabits per second. We're doing traffic management. This is where the diff strip takes place, a TN, so your 8 classes of traffic. But we're going to pack these into mega packets. The MPP is a mega packet packer. Okay, we're going to put this into mega packets. 2 qualities of service, okay, real-time, non-real-time, okay, and virtual output queues. What does virtual output queue mean? We actually take the packets and put them in a separate queue per destination output port. Okay, so these are like arrivals coming off the street. They're going to different cities, so they line up in different queues. Okay, so those are your virtual output queues. There's 2 flavors of virtual output queues. There's real-time and non-real-time. So each one of our systems here had to have 256 queues. Okay, 128 ports times 2 priorities. Okay, so these mega packet packers put in requests to a scheduler that's not shown, and the scheduler decides who gets to go. It's a matching algorithm, okay? These output queues are putting in requests, okay, for credits, if you will, to transfer to certain output ports, and the scheduler is sending this out, okay? So the approach we took was the following, okay? Well, we show there's one output port, and so what the control system over here, initially, our view was that it would have something like this, okay? it would use weighted fair queuing, which is like weighted processor sharing, if you will, discretized, okay, to divide the bandwidth that gets to go out that output port into two parts, real-time, non-real-time. And then it would further use weighted fair queuing to divide amongst the various input ports. Okay, so that was your original view. At the output, at the megapacket packer, the operation went something like this. Packets come in. We're looking at only one output queue, one virtual output queue. So these are all going to the same output port. Okay, they get packed, non-real-time, real-time, until you get a full megapacket. Okay, and then you have your timers. Okay, when the timers fill up, you send your request. Okay, so there's your timer mechanism. Okay, we already talked about that. Initially, we looked at a static timer, just fixed a number. Okay, and what you find is the following. Okay, that at the low end, you need a more aggressive type of timer. Okay, but an aggressive type of timer is going to generate megapackets requests more frequently. But in the context that there's also non-real-time traffic, okay, you get into problem and you saturate more quickly because you're burning too much bandwidth. Okay, so what's clear then is that you need an adaptive, what does it say that? Anyway, you need an adaptive mechanism to what we're trying to do is have it both ways. We want it down over here, but we don't want that wasted over there. Okay, now a couple of observations before we go into the adaptive mechanism. Okay, one way to view the virtual output queue is packets are coming in and they're being shaped, okay, as almost like a token bucket. So I don't know if people know what a token bucket is. Token bucket is you have traffic coming in and you made an arrangement that you're going to issue. It's like giving an allowance. You run kids on token buckets. You give them an allowance once a month, okay, and they can only spend according to the rate at which you give them an allowance. They can save up the money and save it in one big shot, one burst, or okay, so anyway, so we're going to introduce token buckets. So that's where, so that's one way of viewing it, and I need to speed up. Okay, so this is what we're trying to do, right? Get something close to the video performance. Okay, so let's talk about, and this is what we expect to gain. Okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to, over there we had a timer, 150 microseconds, okay? We're going to relax that timer. If we relax that timer, then the rate at which we issue requests will be less, and hence we will consume less bandwidth, okay? And what we expect to do with that, so we're going to give flexibility here in terms of how we adapt the rate in order to be able to carry more traffic, if you will. Okay, so weighted fair queuing or processor sharing is fair in the sense that it paces the rate at which you can send the package from a certain queue. But for the real-time traffic, that has the effect of making the delays longer. So what we chose was to replace weighted fair queuing with strict priority. Okay, so what we did was we put strict priority here. Okay. And what we then did was we had to put a mechanism here to control the bucket rate. Okay, now, this is the part where I left all kinds of equations out because we have to estimate how much bandwidth is available there to control the bucket rates here. And what we did was we had a background control system that every 150 microseconds took a snapshot how many requests of each type had come in and went and did the arithmetic of what would have happened in the ideal case. And according to that, it issues credits. Okay, it regulates the credit rates. So you send that feedback information about every 150 microseconds, and to control the rates. Okay, I'm almost out of time, so let me go to the performance. It looks something like this. This is right out of the spec. So some simulations. This was a high load scenario. We're trying to carry 7.5 gigabits in the static case, 8.5 in the adaptive case. Here are the results. Okay. Static timer, the real time average is 92, the max is 190. Okay. Remember, this is carrying 7.5 gigs though. Over here, you move to 8.5. Go to 8.5. With just the adaptive timer, you get 105, but a high delay. You put something called virtual scheduling. This is the guy in the background. Okay, that brings it, increases somewhat, but brings this one down. And then there's something else called non-real-time bandwidth traffic. Remember, we get strict priority to real-time, but we don't want it to swamp. So we give it strict priority, but only up to its provisioned bandwidth. Then we stop, give non-real-time their due, what's been provisioned. Anything left over, we give back to real-time. Okay, and so this one brings the delay down. Okay, finally, let me just close with this one. This is a low load scenario. There's only real-time traffic, a little bit, 2.5 gigs. Okay, static timer would have had you doing this. Okay, adaptive timer would have been sending full rate, 39. Okay, the virtual scheduling doesn't give that amount back to real-time, so you can see the rate drops. Okay, but when you take the non-real-time excess and give it back to real-time, it comes back down. Okay? So, in conclusion, the issue here, as I said, was one of intelligently wasting bandwidth to meet a delay requirement. Okay? It turns out that if you look at the SONET problem, where things are coming in time-slotted fashion, you have the same skinny flow problems, okay? There's 50 megabit single flows, but these are periodic arrivals, and you're trying to schedule them. Now, again, you come at the question of wasting bandwidth, but in this case, to make a fabric non-blocking, not delay, fabric non-blocking, okay? So anyway, so that's it. Thank you.